City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Peter Maverick.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queer Cast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Always worth it. American Airlines. Offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago and the Light in the Piazza. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
You're wondering who I am.
Secret, secret, I got a secret.
Machine or mannequin.
Secret, secret, I got a secret.
With parts made in Japan.
Secret, secret, I got a secret.
I am the modern man.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast. This is show 113. I'm Peter Maverick.
And I'm Amy Matheny.
Hey.
Hello, Peter.
How are you?
Oh my God, so much has happened since last we talked.
I know. Tony's.
Well, Tony's and Tony. Tony Soprano.
Oh my God, that was a horrible ending.
Oh, really?
I thought it sucked. What did you think?
I liked it.
Really?
I liked it because I think that they may do a movie, or I think that they may do something. I have this feeling, don't stop believing, that they're going to do something else and it's going to come back and I'm going to get to see these characters again. And I don't know. I'm just so glad there wasn't some big Scarface, like,
no,
cocaine going everywhere and everyone getting shot up kind of ending. Oh, I really didn't want that to happen. I wanted him to be trapped in this place where, you know, well, I don't know. You hated it. You just hated it because it didn't make a choice.
It wasn't a Sopranos episode. There was a lot of tension, I thought, but, you know, it was like all the work and no happy.
Well, see, what I thought is that, you know, they have a real trend, the Sopranos. This is so not gay, but we're gay, so
that's
we're talking
okay
about it. But the Sopranos has this real trend of always having the next to last episode of the year always being like this big earth-shattering
sure
episode, which they did have last
absolutely
week. And but I really feel like the right place to put him is that he could get killed because you don't know. I mean, there could be some horrible act of violence happen right after that blackout.
Right.
Everything could go on as normal. But the one thing that's true is that there's going to be this tension. You know, is he going to go to jail? Is he not going to go to jail? Is he going to get killed? Is he not going to get killed? But the one thing that's going to be true is that they're this family unit and they are always going to have something that they have to deal. Like, they're always going to have the stress of looking over his shoulder.
Yep.
And to me, that's what it did. Even just that building of that tension, is...
I was just glad it wasn't a Newhart thing where he like sort of, or like he just kind of woke up.
Yeah.
And was like, I was that all a dream?
Yeah. Oh no. Although that was a great ending to that show. Nobody else could ever duplicate it.
No.
But that was the most brilliant ending ever.
Really,
you know, I mean, I just think that there's not really, no one would have been happy if you'd killed him, if he had gotten away with it.
One's happy now though. Have you been online?
I haven't been.
They are hot about it.
Are they?
The whole blogosphere. Everyone's like, that was it.
But I think that is it. I think that's how we got it. We got it in the beginning with this gangster going out by a pool in his robe looking at ducks. You know, I mean, this was who he was. He was just this guy who at the simple end of it was just a guy who's going to eat some onion rings and listen to some Journey and be with his
family.
Yeah, onion
rings. What was that? I don't know. Weird to me. Fried zucchini, I think, would have been a little more apropos.
Yeah.
Would have been a little more I-10.
I don't know. You know, everybody said like Carmela's going to get killed or the kids are going to get killed or he's going to get killed. And all that would have brought about way too much hubris. And I think that honestly, he's just, he's who he is and it's what it is. And I do think that there's the option now to... I don't know, do a movie or something. We'll see.
Yeah, but a movie's going to... I can't imagine that anything beyond this is going to be very good. I really can't, because I think right now everybody's in their prime. Everybody's in their groove. Everybody's in their thing. And then trying to pull them together to do a movie. No, none of that is in talks and none of that is happening now. So enough Sopranos. But yes, I was not happy.
You didn't like it. I did like it. I thought that it was the right suspension for the reality of the situation. You know, I don't want it to come to an end. I want to just know that it's going on.
No, I wanted it. I wanted the addiction to be done. Finally, I wanted it. I wanted to get rid of the crack.
Tony Awards were kind of a snooze for me.
Yeah, wasn't...
You know, I thought that it was really lovely. David Hyde Pierce, you know, who had just come out, was able to thank his partner of 24 years, which was really cool. And it's just, there's nothing gayer than the Tony Awards. But
but I think no, the Oscars surprises were gayer, even though they weren't about gay movies. It just didn't... It seemed very...
But the one thing I can tell you is that they ended in 3 hours exactly to the minute that... It would be like only
people.
Radio and theater people right? can keep it within the stupid movie and music people fucking go over to 3 hours.
Because they get
and
to take
minutes.
Two, take three, take four. Well, that's the so movie stupid. Biz.
They're so stupid. And I loved that the Tonys were right on target. And you know, I mean, I think the appropriate things won, although I thought the only really surprise of the night was David Hyde Pierce. I mean, he was truly the only... surprise.
Yeah, shock. But I'm excited because we're just about to see Spring Awakening like in like 5 days now.
Excellent.
6 days. So I'm glad we got our tickets already to go see it.
I want to see Grey Gardens, and I just have to get to New York to see it because
we have the Spring Awakening matinee. So we have the Saturday matinee. So we may like wander over to the Hot Ticks booth and see what we can do. But we are literally book solid for that. I mean, I was just looking at our itinerary.
So much fun. I can't wait to hear about it.
I'm not
going to
sleep
while you're talking and sending.
I think maybe we're going
to
try. I've been toying around with how we're going to do it, and I may just like take people along. So the show may be these little stickies of like 4 and 5 minutes just along the entire week. And
I think that would be fabulous.
The audio blog of it all.
I think that would be great. Just a little bit here and there.
We'll see. Yeah. I'm a little worried about traveling like with a lot of recording equipment though, because I know I have to check everything.
Your little mini thing.
I know, but that it's the small ones now that they're looking at, like a big giant microphone and a tape recorder. They'd be like, oh, we know what that is. This little thing. They'd be like, what is it? Turn it on. What does it do?
Yeah.
Open it up. Take the battery out. So, I don't know. I guess I'm probably freaking out for nothing. But
I think so. Hey, speaking of awesome sound, I don't know if anyone in the Chicago area has been to the Charter One Pavilion, but I went to see Stevie Nicks and Chris Isaak this past weekend. And oh my God. First of all, it's Stevie Nicks. So just fucking oh my God. You know, that's it. It was awesome. Awesome. Awesome.
Yay.
Chris Isaak, Telly Hunky and adorable. But the thing I have to say is that if you've not seen a show at the Charter One Pavilion, I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's Man on a Corner who's playing the center stage with his, you know, piece of wax
ukulele.
Paper and a comb. Honestly, it is the best sound I have heard in the city of Chicago, indoors or outdoors.
Now, you said
that
to me.
And not a bad seat in the place.
You said that to me, and I actually made a whole bunch of phone calls and started, you know, talking to my music peoples and my stuff. And most of the bands actually bring their own sound kit.
Well, whatever.
So it's not necessarily house system. But with that said, for being on the Chicago lakefront, everybody gives it great props for where it is.
It is amazing. It's gorgeous. It was easy to get to. Mm-hmm. You're in a beautiful setting. Now, if it rained, you'd be SOL. I mean, you totally would be because there's no seat covered. But there's not a bad seat in the house.
Yeah.
There's not a bad seat in the house. The way they've configured it.
It's Alpine Valley-ish.
I've never been to Alpine Valley, I don't think, but it is just truly amazing. And I thought the sound was great. And I also went on and read some reviews and people were saying, it's best sound, saw the Black Eyed Peas, most awesome sound. And so I don't know, maybe it's where it is in the Nexus, but it just really just is you could just hear her inhale. It was just great. And it just, and
well,
she
good.
Was just
good
amazing,
engineers been there,
you know,
so.
Just amazing. The Witch. I love her
the
so
witch.
Much.
Was she all like,
she was
swirly and
could,
twirly.
Oh,
and
of course. Oh, of course. She said she'd just come from Atlanta and, you know, she's dressed up to her neck and then the long gloves, you know, Diane Keaton and Stevie Nicks have the same kind of fashion.
Atlanta
guru.
Though, wrapped up like that.
Well, she was just in Atlanta and she said it was really chilly here in Chicago. They'd just gotten back from Atlanta and I turned to my friend Mitchell and I said, what the hell do you think she was wearing in Atlanta? Goes the exact same damn thing. And I'm like, God, schwitzing.
Oh my God.
Her butt off.
She was like just a whirling dervish of sweat.
She's so fabulous. Go see Stevie Nicks. It's incredible.
Absolutely.
And we were both at Midsummer Fest.
We were.
Past
we were. I also went to the Blues Fest.
You did?
I did. I went to the Blues Fest on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then just had an incredible time. Rode my bike down, packed all the stuff up. We packed all the blankets and everything. Had an incredible time. I don't remember the name of the bands we heard.
You were too drunk.
No, it's not even that. We were too far away. And for the life of me, I could not find a flyer that said who was where.
Like, oh, wow.
We had forgotten to grab a reader.
Yeah.
But it was just enjoyable. There was a bunch of New Orleans people we heard,
sure,
up there. And then it ended with probably a semi-famous blues band, but they were great. I miss Coco Taylor. I knew she was on Thursday. I wanted,
right,
to go see her because she's going to drop dead anytime soon. She's real old.
She's
real old. But it was nice. It was just a perfect day. We brought some little snacky food. We brought little cocktails, brought a little bottle of Jameson whiskey, close to the porta potties, close to the beer tent. But it was too crowded in the streets. It was like Taste of Chicago crowded by the food tents, and that's not for me. So
see, that was the thing also, the Charter One Pavilion, great bathrooms, like Cirque du Soleil, the big trailers where you walk in and it's all air conditioned, and
did Mitchell go to the boys' room? Was it a big trough?
Yep. No, I don't know. I didn't ask. But the girls was fantastic.
It probably wasn't, because he would have been talking about that.
We were just talking about how nice it all was. Really, 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 yeah, great.
Well, it's new, and I hear that there's plans to permanentize the, yeah, whole thing, because it's still fairly temporary.
Yeah.
Given how it's laid out, so yeah, they're trying to do it. I don't know what
all
the exact
probably an
tussle
Olympic
is.
Planning, don't you think? Like if the Olympic thing,
yeah,
happened, that'd be a kick-ass place to see concerts.
Yeah, but even if they put it in permanently now, that's still lots of years away. That's over 8 years away. So they could sort of rip it out and
so
augment
awesome.
It. But
so
good times,
awesome.
But good times. And then, yes, Midsummerfest yesterday.
In the gayborhood, for those who don't live in Chicago, that's kind of used to be women's neighborhood in a Middle Eastern and Swedish kind of.
Swedish, the original Swedish.
Swedish neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And now tons of women have been up in that community,
yeah,
for over a decade, and now tons of guys,
right,
as well.
The
so,
most
gay-owned
property in the entire city of Chicago is in Andersonville.
Yeah.
The most gay-owned homes. And they're just beautiful. Beautiful neighborhoods to bike through or to walk through,
yeah,
or even to drive through. They're just really gorgeous. Not very busy though this year. I don't know why. Maybe it was busy on Saturday. I don't know. I didn't go, but
well,
on Sunday
it
wasn't
very
busy.
Well, it was busier than it was last year. I think that festival,
yeah,
is inching along and getting bigger and bigger. It started out as a very small, modest festival. It's grown in its length this year, which probably spread some people out as well. So I like it. It's just nice and,
right,
manageable. And I think every year it's going to get bigger and bigger and,
yeah,
bigger and bigger.
Well, there's a lot of competition in the city though. You know, Old Town Art Fair,
right,
obviously Blues Fest, and there was one other one. And we were looking, you know, the old Polish ladies that make pierogies, and,
yeah,
like, they were not there. We were mad as hell.
Yeah.
That was like my goal. I was like, oh my God, we're going there and I'm going to get a big giant plate with sour cream and apple.
But there are not a lot of pierogi. There are not a lot of Poles up in Andersonville.
There are not a lot of Poles on Halsted, and they're here every year. So.
Well, that's true.
They're at Belmont and Sheffield Music Festival too. So I think they were at the Old Town Fair.
Probably.
That's where I think they were.
Because there's more Polish.
I don't even think it's like that. I think they were just like, where's the more people? And the Old,
yeah,
Town Festival is just huge. I'm so sad that I didn't get to go. We sort of meant to split our day and do a little Midsummer Fest and a little Old Town, but it just didn't happen. My friend Janie has a little balcony there on Summerdale. So we were actually hanging on the balcony most of the time and watching it. People.
Oh, that's fun.
Making them show us their bits and pieces. We were like, I got some beads. Show us your doink. And he, oops, I don't have any beads. Sorry.
Oh, oops. Oopsie.
But it was delightful anyway. And I curled up with my friend last night and had a lovely little evening. So
you did?
Yeah, there's a little special person in my life now. So folks, I'm not single anymore. So you missed your chance.
Oh, God.
I'm not dating it. Well, I'm sort of, but not. Yeah. So there you go. That's what
it's
that
for
is.
Another queer cast.
You know,
we'll just get.
We'll dive into that.
Just like we're looking at the Princess Diana of Wales Chronicles. We will look at the Peter Maverick, Prince of
Absolutely.
My. Queen of my Wales.
Queen of my Wales. Oh, my God. Prince of Tides. What?
Prince of Tides. Exactly. I'm very excited to hear all about it.
Yeah,
I guess I'll hear about it
be good. It'll be good. So this is going to be our last day together for a little bit because we're
going to
go our separate ways. And
well, I am going
to
be talking in the next podcast. We will have coming up this weekend. We've got the big Windy City Gay Idol.
Mm-hmm.
So I will definitely be talking about the Gay Idol with hopefully some of our judges and people who've been along the track with us.
Yep.
Plus, by the time the next podcast, I will have seen HRC's True Colors concert here in Chicago.
Oh, yes.
Peter will have seen HRC True Colors concert in New York. So we're giving you kind of a Midwest and East Coast perspective and review on the festival. So, and
Absolutely.
The concert. So it's
a little worried about 5 hours of music.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried about how
that's
going
to... Bring a protein bar. Bring a Zone bar. That's what I'll be doing.
Well,
don't miss the beginning if you're in Chicago, because it's the Clicks or from, you know, Lucas Silvari, who we heard here on our podcast. They're the opening band. So it's like Margaret Cho does some comedy and then they kick it
and
off.
Then they kick it off. But on today's show, we have the... talk about sort of larger than life persona, Chuck Bonozzo of Styx, who has come through so much. I mean, the rock industry is sort of still, it's kind of like a macho butch kind of, you have to maintain this big rocker facade. And Chuck bravely came out just recently in 2001 and also came out all at once with an HIV diagnosis. So it was really put himself out there. He's going to be on the show. He's going to be talking about his new book. It's called The Grand Illusion. It's a fantastic read. And it's really for this, it's got stuff for the Styx fans and it's got stuff for sort of queer people. It's a very empowering story, how he came to really accept himself and accept the life around him. It's just a beautiful, beautiful book. I highly encourage folks to get out there and read it. So Chuck's
going to be... The Grand Illusion.
The Grand Illusion. Chuck's going to be talking with us about that. Plus, we have our movie guy, Richard Knight Jr.
Yeah, lots of big movies in June for Pride.
Yeah, so he's going to be dropping in to stop by. Plus, we got some news and Jerry Potter's going to hang out with us.
It's a big, fat show.
It's a big, fat show.
Before we go away and separate from one another.
Yeah, and then...
It's like they're pulling us apart. Our umbilical cord is... going stretch it out.
It stretches.
Snap.
It should wait till July when I'm in London. How are we going to do that?
I don't know.
Gonna be crazy.
I don't even think about it. It's going to make me cry. I'm going to have to go see funny movies, and I recommend Knocked Up if you've not seen it. I literally almost peed my pants.
Knocked Up. I don't know this.
It's the Judd Apatow 40-year-old virgin, hilarious with Katherine Heigl. You would think you would not like it, and I am definitely not that kind of. It's hilarious. Huh. It is such a funny. He wrote Freaks and Geeks. He wrote 40-Year-Old Virgin. It's brilliant. Some amazing performances.
Both of which I
hated. Thumbs up. Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
I don't think I'd like that one. See, it's good. We disagree. That's good.
I liked it, and it's not my normal fare, so check that one out. But anyhow, we'll have more movies with Richard Knight Jr. and DVDs and much, much more in Chuck Bonozzo after this.
The overture begins. The music swells. You're swept away to the Piazza Michelangelo to discover the light in the piazza. Broadway's most romantic new musical in years, and the winner of six 2005 Tony Awards. As if by fate, a sudden gust of wind blows the hat from a beautiful young woman into the grasp of a handsome young Italian, and it begins. The passion, the romance, Broadway's ultimate love story, The Light in the Piazza. Critics have hailed it a must-see, a consummate work of beauty, with the most romantic score of any Broadway musical since West Side Story. It won the critics. It won the Tonys. Now let it win your heart. The Light in the Piazza.
This romantic new musical is coming to the Auditorium Theater July 10th through July 22nd. For tickets, call 312-902-1400 or visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
While lesser men strapped on skates and played hockey, you donned skin-tight leotards and a teeny cowboy hat and learned figure eights.
Going round and round.
You practiced and practiced, hoping, knowing, someday you'd be good enough to wear a giant puppet costume and skate in an ice show.
Welcome to the big time.
Skate perfectly and you're a crowd pleaser. Mess up and fall on your butt and you're still a crowd pleaser.
Oh!
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Titan of the Tights. You may never wear a medal, but sequins are shiny too.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Weird.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get
some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of June 11, 2007, you are in Chicago's Culture Club.
Now on stage at Victory Gardens Biograph is acclaimed lesbian playwright Claudia Allen's I Sailed with Magellan, adapted from Chicago author Stuart Dybbuk's provocative novel. Breathe deep, look and listen as Allen transforms from the page to the stage, Dybbuk's memories of Chicago's backstreets circa 1950. Passionate, poetic, profane, and powerful. For tickets to I Sailed with Magellan, call 773-871-3000 or go to victorygardens.org.
Northwestern University presents three new musical theater events at its Summer Music Theater Festival beginning June 21st with The Chicago Sound Connection, written, directed, and choreographed by David H. Bell. The festival's featured musical will be In the Bubble, opening July 27th, directed by Michael Grief, director of Rent on Broadway. Tickets start at $25. Call 847-491-7282 or visit tic.northwestern.edu.
The grandeur of Shakespeare and the signature intimacy of Writers' Theater combine to create the potential for theatrical nirvana. Othello, the masterpiece of a general led into a frenzy of jealousy and insecurity by his most trusted soldier. Come closer to Shakespeare than you've ever thought possible and fully realize the breathtaking characters of the world's greatest playwright. For more about Othello, log on to writerstheater.org or call 847-242-6000.
Openly gay actor, author, comic, and playwright Scott Capurro comes to the Lakeshore Theater, 3175 North Broadway, during Pride Month for two nights only, June 29th and 30th at 8 p.m. Don't miss his hilarious and provocative show on gay culture and life. Tickets are only $15. For tickets to Scott Capurro, call 866-468-3401 or visit lakeshoretheater.com.
Looking Glass Alice returns to its home at Looking Glass Theater in the Water Tower Waterworks June 20th after an East Coast tour. Based on Lewis Carroll's Alice's Adventures in Wonderland and Through the Looking Glass, Looking Glass Alice is an acrobatic, playful show for all ages. Variety called it extraordinary. For tickets, call 312-337-0665 or visit lookingglasstheater.org.
And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Great Toronto Summer Adventures! Today's episode, We Will Rock You! Legend has it that audiences at Queen's smash hit musical can't help but leap to their feet when the music starts. This is nonsense, of course, but it serves as a metaphor for... Oh, my. Woohoo! Oh, I meant to do that. Hotel rates from $92 a night. Some conditions apply. Details at TorontoSummerAdventures.com. Oh, my head.
And this is your Windy City Queercast News.
U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates will not renominate General Peter Pace for another term as head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He said the development was not the result of problems regarding the Iraq War. In March, General Pace said that he thought homosexuality was, quote, immoral, and he supported Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
In Florida, Kenneth Wilk, a gay man from Fort Lauderdale, could become the first individual to receive the death penalty since it was revived in the state in 1998. Wilk killed a sheriff's deputy in 2004 when the officer was searching for child pornography in his home. He was found guilty of first-degree murder.
In Tel Aviv, Israel, thousands of people celebrated gay pride, even though it may be the last one celebrated. Israel's government has approved two bills that would prohibit GLBT pride parades in the country.
In Nebraska, Shirley Phelps Roper, daughter of the anti-gay Reverend Fred Phelps, has been arrested after her 10-year-old son, Jonah, stood on a U.S. flag during a funeral demonstration. Phelps Roper was charged with contributing to the delinquency of a minor, flag mutilation, and disturbing the peace while protesting the funeral of Nebraska Army National Guard Specialist Bill Bailey.
Massachusetts Governor Devin Patrick is the first governor to ever march in Boston's Gay Pride Parade. Patrick has been trying to help defeat a proposed constitutional amendment that would prohibit same-sex marriage.
In New York, Micah Kellner has become the first openly bisexual man elected to the state assembly. Kellner, who won with 64% of the vote, will represent the Upper East Side of Manhattan and will join four openly gay members in the legislature.
Kalamazoo, Michigan has revoked health benefits for the domestic partners of its gay employees, becoming the first public employer in the state to do so. The Michigan Supreme Court decided that it said that the state's anti-same-sex marriage amendment prohibited benefits for public workers.
Misha Barton, former star of The O.C., will be in a lesbian film. Wow, she's been in one before, but she wasn't a lesbian. Barton will be featured in Finding Tattoo, the story of an American teenager in Moscow who befriends a Russian girl when it turns out they both adore this Russian pseudo-lesbian lesbian pop band Tattoo.
Pseudo-lesbian love lad. Blitzed by bad reviews and empty seats, Broadway's The Pirate Queen will close June 17th, reportedly costing $16 million. The Frank Galati-directed production, which only filled half of its theater seats, was not nominated for a single Tony Award.
After Ellen.com has revealed its list of the 100 hottest women, the L Word's Lisha Haley topped the list, followed by Angelina Jolie, Kate Winslet, Jennifer Beals, Tina Fey, Drew Barrymore, Ellen DeGeneres, Jordana Brewster, Helen Mirren.
Of course.
Of course. Selma Hayek and Natalie Portman.
Rosie O'Donnell is a wanted woman. NBC programming chief Ben Silverman is saying that he will do anything to get the former View co-host on the network. Silverman is talking to O'Donnell about hosting a new primetime game show. Can you imagine Rosie on a game show?
Rosie would be hilarious.
Open box three. It should be Rosie and Laverne from Laverne and Shirley. That would be delightful.
Oh, Penny Marshall.
Yeah, that would
you
be great.
You pick a box, you open it,
box.
Maybe you make money. And that's your Windy City Queercast news. Well, summer is upon us, and at this time, many people out of school, just carefree, blowing off work, whatever the hell you do when it gets pretty here in Chicago, or in your own city, wherever you're listening to our Queercast, you head to the movies. Summer is a big movie time, so of course we head to the movies with our movie critic from Night at the Movies, Richard Knight Jr. Hey, Richard, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm eating my little free piece of Starbucks.
We are. We're sitting at Starbucks, and hopefully they'll give us money for this Queercast since we're doing it from Starbucks. So the month of June kind of, well, really Memorial Day kicks us off with just, you know, we've had the Spider-Man, we've had the Pirates of the Caribbean, we started having all the sequel movies coming.
Well, as I said, they pushed, in the last month's broadcast, they pushed summer back to the beginning of May. I mean,
right.
It kicked off really early this year, so yeah, we've already seen a lot of stuff.
So is June a particularly queer month for us, since it is Gay Pride? Is it for the films and what's coming out this summer?
It's more probably with DVD.
Okay.
But there are some feature things that are...
Well, let's start with features, and then we'll go into DVDs for June.
Well, definitely queer-friendly. Coming to a neighborhood in your area, it's already played here in Chicago, but it's an amazing documentary called Show Business, The Road to Broadway.
Ah.
Made by this Tony Award-winning Broadway producer, Dori Berenstein, who also directed Unzipped, the Isaac Mizrahi documentary, and did the cable TV show with Alan Cumming, who's a co-producer, is in the film.
Uh-huh.
It's about...
He's everywhere these days.
Yeah, that guy is amazing.
And married now.
Right.
In a kilt or something.
In a kilt, yes. And the film documents the mounting of Wicked, Avenue Q, Carolina Change in Taboo.
Season.
So it's that season. And
I was in New York a lot that season, so...
So there's a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff. Any, you know, I'm a big old show tune queen.
Yeah,
and
me too.
I told Dori when I interviewed her for the paper, I said, this is like mother's milk to me. I wanted to live inside the movie. It was so great.
And it's coming to, you think, a lot of theaters around?
It's
major
it's,
cities especially,
yes,
I'm sure.
Yes, it's going around, and you can go to their website, which I want to say is showbusinessthemovie.com, and you can find out. So it's playing around the country now at different times. So.
And is it really just kind of trying to show how corporate the showbiz world has become, the theater world has become?
You,
those are big musicals that
you,
were
you
all...
You see the creative process, you see the corporate... She's got a Broadway publicist. There's also a round table with the four critics in New York that she keeps showing at lunch, talking about what they're going to see. They dish, they this, you know, all the way up to the day of the Tony nominations. And she's got cameras at everybody's house, and then you actually see the Tony. So, and then, of course, along the way, some shows, which had high hopes, didn't make it. And so, yes, you do see business stuff. And, of course, with that much material, you know, stuff falls along the wayside. But she does have Broadway veterans and scene watchers kind of commenting on why Broadway...
So interesting, because it sounds like stuff that normally gets done for television but never really makes it to the theaters.
Right.
And also, I mean, I remember back in, like, the 80s, they had the film That's Entertainment that came out to a lot of the... movie theaters, you know, that was kind of about the movie musical.
1974.
Yeah, yeah.
Before you were born. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
All right. So, anyhow, so this is the new age, and it seems like, you know, they're saying this year, you know, the Tonys are in the month of June, so that makes it very gay. you know, that there's a revitalization happening right now in for musical theater in New York, and that's kind of continuing to grow, and we're feeling it here in Chicago. I don't know where you all might be listening from, where you're living, but it's definitely in these major cities.
It's very exciting,
right?
And to see this film is filled in front of the, you know, on stage and off stage with queers and lesbians. We are completely, you
all
know,
over it.
All over it. So that's
excellent.
Great. Another one filled with queers. Yeah, another one filled with queers.
Ocean 13.
Ocean 13. Queer eye candy, I tell you.
How pretty are just all those boys? And Ellen Barkin, they even gave us a great dyke.
Right,
I mean, you know, she's
right.
So dykey. She's
the
I
only
love her.
Woman in the whole movie.
I know, and she's
yeah.
Such a broad.
Yeah.
I love her.
And as people have asked me now, is this one different than the last one? And I, you know, I can't remember a single frame of Ocean's 12. I know I enjoyed it.
Ocean's 11 was the one that was so good.
That was the first one.
The first one was really great.
And what I can tell you is this is back in Vegas, baby.
Yeah.
So it's ring-a-ding-ding time, and Al Pacino is fun and great. And, you know, the plot is so twisted, and there's so many little elements to it that I lost my way, but I didn't care.
Right.
You know, it's just it's a perfect date movie. It's very easy.
And those boys just have so much fun.
Really,
I mean,
it's a
great ensemble piece. And I'm glad they actually came back with an Ocean 13 because it didn't like 12 very much. And I loved 11.
Do you remember it?
I don't remember it that
it
much
takes
today.
Place in Italy or something, right?
Yeah, I don't remember it that much.
Okay.
But I loved Ocean's 11. And so I think they're going back to kind of like what worked with Ocean's 11.
Okay, well,
it sounds
this one definitely worked. I liked it a lot.
And bringing in Pacino and Barkin, that's obviously
yeah,
very, very,
yeah.
very fun.
So, like that.
Very what queer. Else is big in the month of June?
Well, for you blockbuster types, we have Fantastic Four: Rise of the Silver Surfer.
Okay, I'm not interested in that at all, but maybe some of your comic book queers will be interested in that.
I think they're going to be very interested
in
this.
The lesbians will like the Jessica Alba, the Latina love child.
There's a lot of little eye candy there, a lot of gay subtext. Obviously with the Silver Surfer, who is naked,
yes, thank you.
The whole thing. But they airbrushed his private parts like the Oscars, so you're just going to have to use your imagination.
Okay.
Let's see, what else we got?
For the lesbians. The Angelina Jolie film.
Mighty Heart with Dan Futterman.
Dan Futterman, who's just, God, look at him. He's just really catching his star. He wrote Capote, right?
Capote, and I think people will know him probably from playing Will Truman's boyfriend.
Will and Grace.
Will and Grace. Been around for
a long time.
Great actor.
Now he's bouncing back and forth between being a filmmaker and an actor.
And I have to tell you, I go in and out on Ms. Jolie.
Yeah.
I've seen the film.
Yep.
And
what is this about for people who don't know?
This is the story of the Wall Street journalist Daniel Pearl, who was kidnapped and executed.
Right. In Iraq.
In actually Karachi.
I mean, yeah, that's right.
In Pakistan. But it's all kind of connected to Al-Qaeda and the terrorist thing. And
this was based on like this.
On her book.
On her
Marianne
book.
Pearl, who Jolie plays, and Dan Futterman plays him. And she's wonderful in the film.
Yeah.
She
I know
actually
that
is a complete movie star. You say, okay, this is a fully realized, you know, this
you know,
is why
and,
she's who she is.
And she, you know, I have heard her talk about this because obviously this is a film that's gotten some real international attention at the Cannes Film Festival recently. And, you know, I think having met her and knowing the woman who she was portraying.
Oh, wait, can I touch you?
What? I don't know her. No. Angelina Jolie knew the woman that she was playing.
Oh, I thought you had met Angelina.
No. I don't know
her. Did you get her number? Come on.
Wow, you were really impressed with me, weren't you?
I was like, wow.
No, I keep my relationship with Angelina on the DL.
Okay.
On the DL. Okay. I wouldn't be saying that on the podcast. But, I just think she felt such a huge investment in this character. And I think when she does, it's golden. And I think she felt the same thing with Girl Interrupted. And I think she felt the same thing when she played Gia Carangi and Gia. I think she is really good at recreating these. Even though Girl Interrupted was not a real character, she kind of based her on a real character when she was
you know, dealing with her own kind of psychological problems.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, this is like a slam dunk for her.
Well, it's a, again, it's a, it's a, she's a French, so she has an accent.
She's got a fro, too. She got the curly hair.
She's the curly. And but what I love about her character, she's a fiercely intelligent person, this character, this woman.
Yeah, Marianne Pearl.
Who, the way she reacts is the way a lot of people would react.
Yeah.
In that position. You're smart. You know what to do. You know, or you don't know what to do. And you contain things and you deal with what you have to. Then you go off in the room. Sort of like the Queen. Remember, there's this moment in the Queen where she finally, no one's around, she can let it go.
And she's out in the woods.
Yeah, and it's a very straight-ahead film.
Yeah.
And he's wonderful, too. Dan Futterman, he plays the husband.
So there's a lot of big female star power this year, because I know you and I, right before we started recording, we were talking about this new movie, Evening, which I don't know anything about, but I know it is the A-list of A-listers.
So
and mother-daughter teams. I mean, yeah. The Redgraves, the Streeps,
the Glummers. Streeps. It was adapted by queer novelist Michael Cunningham's The Hours, A Home at the End of the World, who I talked to, and is wonderful, and loved this material so much, and the book by Susan Minot, if I'm saying it correctly, that he executive produced it as well. But he said it took 5 years to get this made, because the audiences for women's pictures, chick flicks, are not what they once were. And of course, they got this dream cast. He knew very early on Claire Danes was going to play the title. It's basically two daughters, Toni Collette and Natasha Richardson, are the daughters of Vanessa Redgrave, who was dying at the opening of the film. And they're sort of at the deathbed, you know, and then she has hospice and a nurse, whatever. And she's mumbling, and she's saying things about somebody named Harris and how this Harris was the lover. They have no idea who this person is. And then it goes back to when she was a young girl in the 50s in Newport. So it's beautifully filmed, summer, very wealthy, waspy kind of culture. And then Claire Danes plays a young version of Redgrave, who is kind of this bohemian Greenwich Village girl who comes to be the bridesmaid, or the best, what is it, maid of honor or something?
Maid of honor.
What is that, Amy?
The maid of honor.
For Streep's daughter, who plays her, Mamie Gummer.
Mamie
thank
Gummer.
You.
She went to Northwestern here in Chicago.
Oh, right.
Yes.
Right. And she's being married to this guy, and it turns out that there's this whole, they're all sort of attracted to this Patrick Wilson, who's related to the family, and then you dance, he plays the brother Buddy, who is sort of conflicted in a kind of a drinker, and Glenn Close is the mother, and then this
look
whole,
at this cast.
It's an amazing cast.
So do they all kind of deliver? Do you have any favorite performances in this in terms of actresses or actor? I like Patrick Wilson an awful lot. He's an awfully accessible actor.
He's so, and he's
and handsome
just
and,
so beautiful. They're all in love with him. You Dancy, who I, you know, haven't, I know he's on Broadway right now in the World War I play. Is wonderful. Each character, it's such a rich cast that you want more. I mean, the film sort of leads to what I think is the summer's greatest special effect, which is a scene between Redgrave and Streep together, face to face on this bed. That I was just like, this is better than 1,000 Pirates.
Wow.
I don't care to see these two.
1,000 Pirates. So now everybody knows that I watch the Oprah and. Recently, Oprah this past week had on Michael Moore, which I thought was really unprecedented
Sicko,
for her.
I didn't see it.
So you didn't see Oprah, you haven't seen Sicko.
I haven't seen either.
Well, I
don't
think...
I saw him on Bill Maher.
I saw him on Bill Maher too, and I am extremely excited to see this movie. Can you talk just a little bit about what that he's done, you know, what the Sicko is about? I mean, he always is going after something or going to reveal or expose something as a documentary filmmaker.
He's taking on the healthcare industry, and from everything I've read, you know, once again, he hopes that this will revolutionize, that people will start to talk and maybe make some changes, and he focuses on people who are not necessarily poor people or disenfranchised.
Right.
These are like middle class people, you know, like ourselves, who go through.
Who have healthcare
or don't have healthcare and go through cataclysmic stuff. But a lot of it is about people who put in legitimate claims, they're denied for whatever reason, And then he goes around to other countries and I think takes a bunch of people who have developed terrible illnesses because of 9/11. These rescue workers.
One of the clips that I saw from it was, you know, showing how at Guantanamo Bay, in Guantanamo Bay, with the people that we suspect as terrorists, they have pretty extraordinary health care, and how there are just countless hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people being affected who were just volunteers who went down and worked on 9/11 right. and can't get any coverage. And, you know, there's a really polarized feeling on socialized healthcare in the United States. And he makes a really good point that there are a lot of things that we have that are socialized. We don't pay for the police if we have to call the police. We don't pay for the firemen if we have to pay for the firemen. When there are these crises situations where there are these things when we are in need, quote unquote in need, we don't have to pay for them because we live in America, you know. And he's saying, so we already actually have socialized programs that work and work pretty well, you know. And so I thought that was really captivating. I know it has not been, it releases at the end of the month, right?
Yes, actually the same weekend as Evening. So you can actually experience two very different kind of movies that week. The thing that may be different about this film, love him or hate him, because I'm on the fence sometimes because he manages the audience response. I'm not so crazy about that. This is an issue that affects everybody, Republican, Democrat, I don't care your political stripe or whatever. Unlike Fahrenheit, unlike Columbine, all those films were very polarizing. Everybody's affected by this in this country. So,
Hopefully we'll create some radical change.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. But I'm dying to see it. I remember people lining up for blocks and blocks. I mean, really, literally, snaking, or, you know, every single theater sold out for Fahrenheit, and I think this is going to have the same kind of reaction.
It's gotten huge, you know, a huge, huge, huge response. Well, real quickly, because we just have a few more minutes, let's go to DVDs for the month of June.
Well, it's
and how
so...
do we get? How do we have some gay fun festivities in our home?
All right. Well, first of all, we have the Extra Frills edition of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, which is has a lot of fun deleted stuff you never saw.
That may be what I want to play in my backyard. I want to do a backyard movie on an LCD. Projector, like a film they'd never show in the park because maybe it's just a little too risque.
Okay,
Priscilla would be great.
Priscilla's
don't you think?
A perfect one.
And the new DVD's out.
And then you might also want to check out Desert Hearts.
Well,
special edition.
Yeah, they would like that.
God.
The whole condo next to me.
I was going
to
say they're going to love that.
Oh, Desert Hearts, the movie that made me know that I was a lesbian. That and The Hunger. I love Desert Hearts. If you are a young lesbian and you're listening to this show and you have never seen Desert Hearts, Run, Don't Walk, or Netflix, or whatever you need to do, or just buy it. It comes out at the beginning of June. It's out now.
Yeah, it's out now. Go get that. Finally, you show Toon Queens, A Little Night Music, the movie, with Elizabeth Taylor.
Liz Taylor.
Yeah, it's not the greatest, but just to see her sing Seven Clouds.
Yeah, okay. Well, you got to love that. And Kathy Griffin's season one DVD is coming out.
It's sort of in conjunction with the new season and a new special. And she's
so funny.
Girl on the Friend of Gays. Yeah.
And she's now, a friend of the Max.
That's right.
Your group.
Yeah, the middle-aged queers.
The middle-aged queens.
And then, you camp queens. I'm so excited. There's a Lucia Ball collection. Finally, Mame. The musical with Bea Arthur is coming out on DVD. That's for you, Alexandra Billings.
That is true. She loves Lucille Ball.
The main, but no special features, unfortunately, in the box set.
Okay.
Or at least on that title. So that's great. And then at the end of the month, in honor of
Gay Pride,
we have this whole series from Warner Brothers called Cult Camp Classics. And there are four volumes.
Wow.
Four volumes on different subjects, everything from women in prison with Caged, and Joan Crawford and Shaw, that's for you, Handbag Productions. Then we've got Zsa Gabor and Queen of Outer Space.
Attack of the 50-Foot Woman.
Yeah, Joan Collins gets her own box set because she's made so many bad ones.
Of course she has.
And the same.
And that's all out from Warner Brothers.
That's all Warner Brothers.
Continues to bring out the really great films
so
for us. Yeah.
And then we have Reno 9/11 Miami at the end of the month,
which Jerry Jones, our Kirk Williamson, talks about. And he loves that. He
Lieutenant
loves that film.
Lieutenant Jim Dangle, talked to him. That's
he
a really
loves
fun,
that.
Very gay. So there's a ton more, because it's Gay Pride Month.
Yeah,
you know, there's
a lot coming
out. There's gay everywhere.
Well, we're glad that you sat in with us. We'll look to movies in July next month, but it looks like June can be full of...
Busting out all over with queer,
either in your home in your own DVD or...
Sort of in the theater, a little bit.
A lot of good films coming out. So, Richard, thanks for joining us. And people can check Richard out at Night at the Movies, and that's Night with a K.
Knight at the movies.com,
or you can read his column, of course, every week at WindyCityTimes.com. And we thank you for being with us on
my
The Clicks.
Pleasure. I'm eating my stuff.
Yeah, have your Frappuccino.
Hi, this is Lucas from The Clicks, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
I used to like to walk the straight and narrow line. I used to think that everything was fine.
Born here in Chicago, Chuck Panozzo was involved with music at an early age. Both he and his twin brother John would go on eventually to become a part of the legendary band Styx. But for many years, music was only part of his life. In 2001, he announced in front of 1,000 people at an HRC dinner that not only was he gay, he was also HIV positive. We're so pleased to have Chuck with us today to talk about his new book, The Grand Illusion, Love Lies, and My Life with Styx. Chuck, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Peter. Hey, Amy. Thank you for having me this evening.
Hey, Chuck. It's great to talk to you while you're on a rock tour.
Yeah,
that is
seriously.
Just the coolest thing ever.
So where are you at?
We're on a Styx tour simultaneously.
Exactly.
So, really, I'm just like, where am I today? It's amazing, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, I just came back from Los Angeles. We did the Guys Guide Award for at Studio City for Adam Sandler. I wish it had been called the Gay Guys Award, but unfortunately, I didn't live through it, but it was okay.
That's okay. It works. So... You know, this fantastic book, I've had a chance to read almost all of it. It's this gigantic journey in your life. And I think the biggest thing that I always think in my mind is that the rock industry tends to be sort of very masculine, very tough. I mean, what was it like for you sort of living inside of the closet while you were putting on this facade of a tough rocker? Was it hard? Was it easy? What was that experience like for you?
Well, Peter, I always refer to my outing as I came out of my wardrobe case. Because, you know, I lived in my wardrobe case. My clothes were never in my closet. They were always in my wardrobe case. And so, you know, in the early days, it was fairly easy. You know, I was just glad to get out of the house, to be quite honest with you. And, you know, my buddy was playing music on their stereo. And he goes, oh, this reminds you of Fire Island. I said, I have no connection to that because I was always working with Styx. Mm. So I lost that gigantic a part of my life, a gay life there. But, you know, it wasn't until later on, as the band started to get bigger and bigger, and I realized that I was trapped in a situation where, you know, I'm feeling more and more isolated. I'm not very good at locker room talk. People, you know, I'm feeling like, you know, I use this word, I stand up on stage in front of 10,000 people, and I go, everybody tonight's getting fucked, and I'm just getting fucked over. I really felt that for a long time.
Yeah.
Now, that's not a great attitude to bring into a performance, but on the other hand, it was professional, but, you know, it was just to the point where I started to lose my voice in terms of, you know, I felt like I was becoming nothing in this wonderful world, you know, where I was had everything. Someone said to me, what did you have to give up for your career? I said, everything. What they didn't realize is I had to give up everything could be construed as, you know, education, which I was a teacher, but the sacrifices of becoming a musician. But for me, it was also my true self. The fact that I couldn't say that I was gay. That was the worst part.
And all those rockers, like the women show up in droves, you know, to the backstage doors, and we just hear the whole, you know, sex, drugs, rock and roll kind of persona. Was that something that you were even trying to make an appearance of being straight with, you know, other male rockers that you were around?
Well, it's quite honest with you, no. I would look at these guys and go, who would want them anyway? But the thing is, you know, the guys were married, so their wives definitely deflected any groupies. So I didn't have to worry so much about that. And, you know, if a female asked me, would you sign my breast, would you sign my butt? I go, okay, I can do that for a second, but that's it. And I want to say, can I sign your boyfriend's shirtless chest now? I always have a little sideline fantasy there. But, it's funny because I really had to, you know, I had to play my own mind games to get through it. It's funny because these females flash all the time. You know, I had to laugh. I go, if you think I'm going to miss a beat on that, you're out of your mind. But, you know, it was, it became very impressive for a long time. Until, you know, James Y. said, well, Charles, this is the first definitive book about sticks. I said, James, this is the first definitive book about Chuck. I said, you know, a guy that's been getting excited for 37 years. I said, the title of it, I like you, but I don't love you in the biblical sense, not to worry. And, you know, lies aren't the lies you told me for 37 years. And how could I not talk about sticks? It's been my entire career. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I do interject, talk about two affairs I had, one with a female, which I knew was never going to go anywhere, one with a young man who I met in Chicago, who I wished it could have gone farther, but I didn't know how to do it right. He wrote me about the book and said how much he enjoyed the passages that I had him in, you know, and it made me feel very, very good that I, you know, I tried in my book. A lot of people thought I was going to write a bash book. Well, you know, what good would that do me?
Yeah.
But the book is more about myself. You know, the book is about, you know, every kid every day gets beaten up in class, harassed, bullied, you know, to get to the point where, you know, they quit school. Well, you know, I was that kid once. The only thing that saved me was music. So I want to let the, you know, the younger people in particular know that we don't have to put up with that.
Hmm,
I would say, it's not your problem, it's their problem. We've never forget that, it's their problem.
Well, you know, you talked about a couple of those things, a couple of those incidents just coming up when you're a young kid. Writing a book like this, writing an autobiography, you have to do sort of a lot of digging and a lot of soul searching, and it's very exposing. Did you have difficulty digging through all that when you were preparing the book?
Well, you know, I think all performers are voyeurs and exhibitionists. Really, we are, and we love attention. So, you know, this is really raunchy. I said, it's like wearing your underwear inside out over your head. Everything that's there, people see, whether they like it or not. So, you know, if they don't like it, they can kiss part of it, and they like it. You know, that's cool, too. But I really didn't feel, you know, because I felt that I was speaking my truth. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as difficult as I thought it would be. I just wanted to make sure that everybody that I mentioned, I gave them the dignity and nobility that they gave back to me in either my relationships on a personal level or on a career-wise. So.
Who all did you have to consider before you decided to come out? Family, I mean, friends, band? I mean, did you tell people before you made that decision? Were there, you know, who did you want to consider and tell before you made the declaration?
Well, you know, when you grow up Italian Catholic on the south side of Chicago, where, you know, the nuns and the priests and Jesus and Mary and all the rest are everything, and honor is everything. It's like with the Sopranos about the guns. I'm not kidding. And that kind of can be a loving environment. On the other hand, you know, if you said you were gay, you know, the fear of being rejected or mental abuse for a very long time was, I think a lot of us in some part of our life are afraid of being rejected, you know, especially from our parents. My father died. This is for the elderly fog, excuse me. Smug. Anyway, has your ears blown apart yet?
No,
anyway,
no, we're good.
We're good.
I apologize. I should have warned you. Warning. But, you know, this is where the hardest part for me to have said was when my dad passed away when I was 25, and I turned to my sister and I said that the wrong parent is dying. And when I said that, my mother never, ever accepted my homosexuality. You know, she never filled a circle. And at the end of her life, she told my uncle, I was in the seminary for a while, she said, It was the priest that made Chuck gay. I said, no, mother, they just wanted to make me. You know, that little subtlety, you know, it took a while to figure that one out, but I got it. But, you know, it was that kind of a heartbreak at the end of her life to know, you know, I know she loved me dearly, but, you know, it's very important for parents to give their children unconditional love.
Yeah.
If animals can give it to us, why can't the highest form the highest form of
intelligent life.
So did the band, I mean, did it affect the band at all? And why and how do you think Styx has stayed together all these years when very few bands make it even past a decade?
Well, I think in the early days, the love of what we did, you know, we were kids. I mean, when I look at the photos, I say, I want to meet that guy again. How cute. You're never going to see him again. So I think the big shock was in 1975. You know, we do an album called, it's an Ice Cube one that's burnt. And Chuck, you're supposed to be prepared here. Anyway, I come to this album. Yeah, I had just cut my hair, and I had a chance to appear at Equinox. I had appeared totally different than what I had looked like before. You know, I had really thin, crummy, I could never grow long hair, and it looked right, you know, and I matured very quickly into my looks. And my twin had no body hair. He would say to me, "Chuck, you don't have a t-shirt on. You look like you have a mohair shirt suit on." Be quiet. Anyway, so I appear, you know, this very short, very, very casual look. And I'm like, "Oh, my God, what did you do?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Well, I can't compete with your hair. I can't compete with your hair. I can't compete with your hair." I said, "But you can't compete with mine either."
Right.
"I'm going to stand out." You know, so that was one of the only ways I could pop out of the band. Otherwise, I'd just be that bass player with the long hair and beard, whatever. So that was good. But it also, psychologically, it was my first psychological statement to say, even though I couldn't, that, you know, I'm the gay guy in the group. Now, I assume that other gay men, maybe, although I always said, there are no gay guys who like rock and roll. I should have been in the Village People of bisexual. But maybe it wasn't going to happen that way. And eventually, you know, I just had to come to terms with, you know, when I would go out, people would say, "Well, what do you do?" I said, "Well, I'm a musician." They always assume I played an organ in the church. I go, "No, I don't do that." Or what I said, "I play rock and roll." And they looked down at me. I go, "Well, okay." Then I stopped saying anything about what I did.
Huh.
Mm. So, I mean, you know, we're talking about a serious long career here. This was not something you, I mean, Amy mentioned it was over several decades that you did
right.
it. At that, I guess in the beginning, how did you know? I mean, did you realize from a very early age, you're like, "Oh, okay, I'm gay," or did you know the word gay, or did you know what a gay person was? Had you seen a gay person, or how did that come into your consciousness?
Well, my consciousness started when I was about 5 years old, and I asked my sister to paint my toenails red. I said, why doesn't Johnny have, then they said, "Oh, this is a mistake, because I don't see anybody else with their toenails painted red but me." So I had a severely broken leg in the second year of grammar school, and so I had to cast for about 6 months of my leg from my toe up to my hip. In fact, there was more plaster on that cast than there is in all the homes in South Florida. Anyway, so, you know, I go back to school, it's not healing properly. So I'm walking this thing around, and this young comes over. She goes, "Charles, we're going to have a fire drill. We're going to have an eighth grade boy pick you up so grandma in the creepy house, he doesn't drop you." I go, "Oh, okay, sister."
Okay.
And all in my mind, "Okay, hooray, we're going to go out and get some fresh air for a change." All of a sudden, I'm looking down, I go, "Hello." And all of a sudden, those really tight blue, cheap uniform pants look pretty cute on those little cheap ones. He says the same thing. "Now, I'm going to grab you by the neck and make sure so I don't drop you. Grab me really tight." Okay. So then it's very impossible back in my desk. And then it comes up, she says, "How did that go, Charles?" I said, "Are we having another fire drill tomorrow, sister?" "Oh, I have one every month. This is going to be the best year of my life." But at that point, I realized there was a piece of the puzzle that was complete. Mm-hmm. Now, did I know how to act it out? Not really, but I knew where my head was at. And but it wasn't very long when I heard the priest from the altar say, "They would always call gay men those guys that are not married." You know, they would never say homosexuals or anything. Mm-hmm. "But those guys that are not married are selfish. They're going to go to hell."
Mm-hmm.
And we knew a couple gay people in our neighborhood. One was a florist, and this one girl said, "I was so afraid of him." I want to say, "You should have been afraid of your fiance. He wasn't afraid of you being afraid of him. Who are you kidding? He doesn't want you." Anyway, you know, these kind of negative feedback all the time. And it was challenging.
Yeah, so fast forward. No, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say, then fast forward to 2001, and you made the very conscious decision to come out at an HRC dinner in front of a lot of people. How did you get to that point then?
Well, you know, it was in 1991, I was diagnosed HIV, and it was really shocking that I wasn't flipped out. A lot of guys just go crazy. And I said to the doctor, "Well, what should I do?" And she said, "Go home." I said, "Pardon me?" She goes, "Oh." So I had a good friend. We had just had a friend jump out a window. He was on ADT for about 5 years. Mm-hmm. And we both said, "Oh, my God, no one's getting better, getting worse." I was in still fairly good health. But I said to my friend Richard, "Get a test." He goes, "Oh, I can't get a test. I might lose my job. I might lose this." I said, "In other words, you're willing to lose your life, huh? You're willing to be intimidated by the system, huh?" I said, "Richard, mm-hmm. this is a major error." So, of course, I should talk. Late 98, I go down 130 pounds. and Tommy Shaw, one of our band members. I'll never forget this. He turned to me and said, I'm afraid I'm never going to see you alive again. So with that warning, I said, guess what? This isn't just a natural weight loss there. This is more than nutrition. You know, more serious. And I wasn't really figuring out that I had carposis sarcoma all over my body. And it was only the only time that really bothered me was in my, when it got on my neck. I said, oh, my God, what next? My nose? So, you know, just how vain I could be. And but, you know, luckily, protease inhibitors were out, and I was able to get through that serious bout of AIDS. But my friend, as I'm getting better, I bring him to Northwestern. 8 months later, he dies of HIV-related lymphoma. And the last thing he said, I waited too long, Chuck. Well, you know, I never want to hear anybody have to say that again. You know, I want to make sure when I started to feel better, I wasn't quite ready to come out. What happened was, you know, we all have this one moment of darkness in our life. I'm in my apartment in Chicago off Lakeshore Drive, filled with gold and platinum. I was just shining everywhere. I said, glorious career, but you with the most fuck person light ever. You have no lover here. You have no boyfriend. There's no one to comfort you here. Now these things are going to come down on the wall and say, hug you? Nothing. It's you better make a decision. You can get through this episode. If you want a real life and be honest about yourself, you have to change it. So it was that point that I said, if you get through this, I want to come out in a dignified manner, you know, as opposed to a bathhouse, per se, right. Or, you know, doing something in the woods, you know. But I, through networking, and eventually got a hold of Candace Gingrich and David Smith, and, you know, it was a glorious day. I still wasn't feeling very well, and I looked kind of crappy, but my aunt and uncle came to represent my parents, and my family was there, and 1,000 people. And, it made, you know, and when I said those words, and, you know, all of us know, I mean, I'm not telling any revelation here, but once you say those words, I'm going to live my life as an openly gay man, you know, or female or whatever, you know, it just sets yourself free. There's no experience like it. You know, I have had every sacrament of the Catholic Church. You know what? None of them put together has given me the same kind of excitement and energy that those simple phrases gave to me.
Well, and last year you were able to be a big part of, you know, supporting the gay community, also a great face of the gay community when you sang and played here in Wrigley Field at the closing ceremonies of the Gay Games with Dylan Rice, a local singer-songwriter that you have been very influential in Dylan's life. What was that moment like for you, singing in Wrigley Field in your hometown at the Gay Games closing ceremonies?
Well, you know, Dylan and I had been talking about this for a long time, and, you know, I had performed some little benefits from him, and was encouraging him. You know, no one mentioned me as a gay musician at all, because there was no record contracts for you. You know, maybe if you're Liberace, who would want to be him? But but you know, if you were younger and wanted to write about life experience, there was just no outlet here in the States. So I kept talking to him about being discouraged and continue on. You know, so I performed a few times with him and for a little benefits and this and that. And, you know, and I actually went to New York. I hooked him up with a lawyer and he actually got a record deal because of that. Yeah. But I feel strongly about Dylan and his talent. And as I do, I know my job now, as I would say, someone said, for an old guy, you look pretty good. I said, let's try to use the word older, okay? You're not getting an autograph, kid.
You're hot, Chuck. So, you're totally hot. You look hot in this book, and you looked hot in that field, let me tell you.
Thank you. Well, you know, it for me, you know, having come as far as I have, for me not to help another gay artist would be criminal. I mean, how can I turn my back and say, oh, no, I can't be bothered? That's baloney. You know, as a senior statesman, I think it's a responsibility for people in the GLBT community to share our knowledge with younger gay men and women, so they know we have a history, and they're part of it. You know, ours is on the wayside, but they're the future of it. You know, right now.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Well, folks, we want to let you know the book The Grand Illusion is out now. You can get it at all of your favorite bookstores. It's really out there. It is a wonderful journey. If you are a Styx fan, it is an incredible read. If you are looking for some help, some inspiration, somebody who's gone through the process and who's shared such a big part of it, this is definitely a book I think that will help a lot of people. And I'm very pleased to have had the chance to talk with you, Chuck, on the show today. Thank you so very much for stopping in with us. I do truly appreciate it.
And
thanks, Amy.
And for more information, you can visit the website Chuck Panozzo's Place. That's Chuck Panozzo's Place, ChuckPanozzo'sPlace.com for tour dates and information on the book and Sticks and Chuck. And we hope that you will catch them while they're out on tour, because we have listeners around the world. So, Chuck, thanks so much for being on the show with us.
Okay, Amy. Okay, Peter. Thank you both.
Thank you. And thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This show is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light, always worth it.
And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
And Broadway in Chicago, for the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
So that's our show. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Peter Maverick. Please comment on our shows on our website and in iTunes.
The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it.
Windy City Queercast, queer and now.
The best and the brightest, served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Podshow and Limelight.